Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Hello everyone, and thank you all for tuning in.
Today's show, we got back-to-back episodes of Calling All Cars, a series that debuted in 1933 to 1939 on the Mutual Network. And it was a series where every episode was based off of real cases from the LAPD, in the same vein as Dragnet. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out the archives for more. And don't forget to check out the descriptions for more information about the episode and show links. And if you're on Spotify, please check out the polls. It'd be great to get some feedback about the show. Based off of previous feedbacks, I've already got a few ideas going. And finally, if you enjoy the podcast, if you find yourself coming back for more, please consider following, leaving a review, and rating. And with all that,
please enjoy the show.
Calling All Cars, a copyrighted program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Police calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 6 regarding a holdup on Terminal Island just before noon. There's two bandits, number one, dark complexion, Mexican or Filipino, about 20 years of age, wearing a dark suit and gray cap. Number two is also dark, wearing a gray suit and gray cap. You men may be heading north toward Los Angeles. Keep your eyes open, boys. That's all. Rolls and quick.
Mrs. Hazel Berg, living in Hollywood, is awakened at 2 a.m. by the ringing of her telephone.
Hello?
Goodbye, Hazel. This is Virginia. I've turned on the gas. I'm dying. But before I leave this world I hate so much, I wanted to say goodbye to you. Goodbye, dear.
Oh, hello? Hello, Virginia. Hello. Oh, operator, give me the police department.
Alternative police calling car 42, car 42. A woman committing suicide with gas at 7566 North Edinburgh in Hollywood.
That's out. Let's go.
Less than a minute after the emergency call was received by the police department, radio policeman crashed down the door, gave Virginia first aid treatment, and saved her life. A few seconds longer, and it would have been too late. And because the police meet hundreds of emergencies like this every day, when seconds saved mean the difference between life and death, they specify Rio Grande cracked gasoline to power more police and emergency cars than any other brand. This emergency gasoline galvanizes into action at the touch of the start. It accelerates so much faster than ordinary gasoline. Police and emergency car drivers in Los Angeles, Oakland, Berkeley, and many, many other cities, as well as deputy sheriffs in Maricopa County, Arizona, and many other counties where great distances must be covered at top speed, all swear by Rio Grande cracked gasoline as the fastest, most powerful, most efficient gasoline they have ever used. And every day, scores of motorists who try Rio Grande cracked gasoline for the first time get the thrill of police car performance in their own cars. And now it is our pleasure to introduce Chief of Detectives H.S. Seeger of the Los Angeles Police Department. Chief Seeger.
Good evening, friends. The law enforcement problems of the Los Angeles Police Department are complicated by the large colonies of foreign language-speaking people in our city. These people do not always understand the work of our police officers. When our department attempts to solve a crime occurring in one of these foreign colonies, we meet many difficulties, as you will hear tonight. It is hard to make our mission understood, and it is even harder for our police officers to understand the meager explanations in a foreign tongue. Despite these handicaps, there are mighty few unsolved crimes of any magnitude. Our detectives must merely work harder and longer tracking down clues. Eventually, we always get the culprit. Tonight's case is a typical of the disadvantages under which our police work. The description of the bandits was so vague it seemed almost impossible that we could even locate them. The story of the missing Mexican sheiks that you are now about to hear is typical of the almost superhuman diligence of your police officers in working out a successful conclusion to a case that had no clues.
It is late morning of February 5th, 1930. Mrs. Takinago, as is her custom, visits her branch bank on Terminal Island in Los Angeles Harbor.
Good morning, Mrs. Nago.
Oh, good morning, Priest.
What will it be this morning?
Oh, I think I take out money today. All money in bank.
Oh, today is your big banking day, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Today, many fishermen, many canary men, he pay off. He come eat at my extra special number one restaurant.
And you cash the checks, is that it?
Yes, I think maybe I wish for them.
Well, I can see what you get out of it. Making a bank for those boys.
Very fine man. Extra special, come find Japanese fisherman. Come number one American fellow. Give money. Money. Last money in my restaurant.
Well, from what they tell me, they'd come anyway to eat your cooking.
Oh, you hear I cook very good.
And that's what they tell me.
Oh, very fine. You come to my place. I get you something nice. Oh, you like some special seaweed?
Seaweed? Well, not exactly.
Maybe so. You like fish. Oh, very good fish. Is it maybe so 8 months old? You like?
Well, I don't know, Mrs. Nago. You see, I'm not used to Oriental dishes. Well, here's your money. $1,000 in 10, 5, and $20 bills. Oh, yes. There's $100 worth of one.
Oh, you count him. They are right.
Yes, I counted it. It's right, just $1,000.
Oh, very good.
Now, be careful of that money.
Oh, yes, I careful. I hold tight in hand.
All right, goodbye.
Oh, goodbye, and you'll not forget. I made special number one Japanese dinner for you.
All right, Mr. Nago. I'll drop in and see you someday.
As Mrs. Nago leaves the bank and walks down the street toward her chop suey restaurant, a sedan, which has been parked across the street, makes a U-turn, passes the little Japanese woman, and comes to a stop a few feet ahead of her. A young man gets out and stands with one foot on the running board, talking to his companion at the wheel as Mrs. Nago approaches him. Then, just as she is passing...
Give to me that money.
Help!
Keep your mouth shut, you.
Oh,
come on,
oh,
give to me.
Stop.
Get to the board.
All right, come on, go ahead. Come on.
$0.17 for the registered letter. 20 cents in all.
Oh, Miss Gordon. Stopping, ma'am. Stopping, ma'am.
Well, what's the matter, Mrs. Nago?
Oh, ma'am, steal money. All money I have. You grab money and run away. No stopping, please.
What's this? Someone stole your money?
Yes, all money in the world. He got it. He took from me. You stop him. You work for government. You're stopping,
please. Oh, but Mrs. Nago, I can't stop him. I only run the post office.
No, you work for Uncle Sam. You can't stop him. Please stop.
Now, look, Mrs. Nago, pull yourself together. I can't do anything about it. But you run over to the fire engine house across the street.
Please?
Right over there, to the fire engine house. And you tell them, and they'll call the police.
They do?
Yes, now hurry.
Oh, thank you, Miss. Thank you, Margo.
Oh, my boy. You never should have left an opening like that. One, two, three. There, make that a king. There's two more. That wipes you off the board.
Yeah, I guess you got me that time.
Hey, look at that Jap woman streaking across the street. Oh, that truck nearly got her.
Oh, here's a fireman. You help me. I find very great trouble.
What's that?
Oh, man, he grabbed money from my hand. He ran away fast in automobile.
What's that you say? You've been robbed?
Yes, I robbed. All money in one. I got no more money. Please, you stop it. You make money come back.
How much money did he take?
Oh, maybe so I think $1,000.
$1,000? What did he look like?
Oh, he's dark. I think he maybe so Mexican.
How was he dressed?
Brick.
What did he wear?
He wearing gray suit, cap too, I think.
What kind of a car was it?
Please?
What kind of a car?
Oh, automobile.
Yes.
Maybe so, bright green.
Anybody with him?
Yes, he has friend. Friend drive car very fast.
What did the friend look like?
Oh, he Mexican too, maybe. He wear dark suit, cap too, I think.
And which way did he go?
Oh, down that way.
Toward the drawbridge.
You think you'll find him? You're stopping him, maybe so. Bring back my money.
Well, ma'am, I'll do the best I can. Give me the drawbridge. Hello? Harry? Christ, at the engine house. Say, Harry, a couple of Mexicans just pulled a strong-arm job down here and got away with a grand. Lift that bridge of yours, will you? Yeah, I want to hold up all the traffic from the island until the Dicks can get over there from San Pedro. Yeah, I'm going to ring them right away.
Captain A.L. Gentry, Detectives Evans and Dunphy answer Captain Christ's call. Dunphy is detailed to keep a lookout in San Pedro for the car and occupant answering the Japanese woman's description. And Captain Gentry and Evans cross to Terminal Island on the ferry. At the open drawbridge, a long line of irate motorists greet them with honking horns as they are joined by officers George Finn and C.H. Hidley from the Wilmington Station.
Hello, Captain. We've been waiting for you.
Hello, Finn. Got here as soon as we could.
Hey, come on. Let's get going.
All right. You'll be moving in a minute.
That's about time.
Hey, they're getting sort of restless back there, aren't they?
Well, a little delay won't hurt them any. Now, here's what I want you men to do.
Yes, sir?
We'll drop the bridge. Then sit this line of cars and trucks up. Get the license number and description of every car and the name and address of every occupant.
Yes, sir.
And if you find a light green sedan with two Mexicans or Filipinos in it, one dressed in a gray suit and the other in blue, both wearing caps, arrest them and bring them in.
Right.
I doubt if you'll find them in this lineup, though. The chances are they've abandoned the car. Evans and I are going to take a look around the island and see if we can locate it.
Along the piers where the great liners lie moored after their journeys from the Orient and the South Seas, and up and down the docks where scrubby tuna clippers sway at their moorings, Gentry and Evans search for the robbers. Their hunt leads them past warehouses that smell of cargo from far places of the earth, and through streets where the fishermen are drying their nets, past canneries, and past lumber freighters. Finally, as they turn into Seaside Avenue...
Say, Captain, this might be it.
What?
You see that sedan down there? Parked right in the middle of the street. Both front doors are swinging open.
Yes, sir. Say, we'll have a look at that.
No, that couldn't be it. The description is light green. This car's blue.
Oh, that don't mean nothing. That poor Jap woman was probably so scared she couldn't tell the difference between light green and dark blue. Come on, let's have a look.
Okay.
Looks like somebody left it in a hurry. Yeah, they've been running it fast. That radiator's hot. Who's it registered to?
Let's see. Now, you might know it's a rented car. California Auto Park in San Pedro.
I'm going to ask that woman over on the porch there if she saw anybody in the car.
Okay.
Pardon me, ma'am. Do you know who owns this car?
No, sabe.
Did you see anybody leave it there?
Sí, dos hombres.
Two men, eh?
Sí.
What'd they look like? Were they Mexicans?
Maybe.
How were they dressed?
One, he wear gray suit. Other, he wear blue.
Well, did they wear caps?
Sí. You know him?
No, do you?
No, sabe.
Do they live around here?
No, sabe.
Well, ever see him around before?
No, sabe.
Well, that's good enough. Thanks. Well, Evans, the description tallies. I guess this is the buggy we're looking for.
Yeah, a lot of good it'll do. These mugs didn't give the right names when they rented it, I'll bet.
Well, we'll follow it up anyway. I'm going to phone the California Auto Park and see who rented this car. In the meantime, you'd better dust and photograph what fingerprints you can find.
Right.
The auto park manager informs Captain Gentry that the car was rented by one J. Colano of 8328 Street, San Pedro. On the way back from Terminal Island, the detectives check this address and discover that it's a school building. They return discouraged to the San Pedro police station to determine their line of action.
Well, we're pretty much up the well-known tree. Phony address, phony name without a doubt. And they didn't catch a shadow of a suspect while they were sifting at the drawbridge. Those birds must have abandoned the car and come over to town on the foot ferry. They're probably miles away by now.
You're forgetting one thing, Gentry.
What's that?
Those prints I photographed this afternoon.
Yeah, if the guys have ever been up before, well, they may help us.
Well, anyway, it's not as bad as it could be.
Huh. Oh, hello, boys.
Hello, Sebastian. How's the merchant's patrol?
Okay. I dropped over from the island to get the latest dope on the crime.
Well, there isn't much dope. We found an abandoned car with some prints on it.
Well, that's something. I've been up at the bridge with the boys checking cars.
You didn't have to do that. You're paid to guard warehouses, not to do our work for us.
Well, I wanted to get in on the excitement.
Yeah, from all I hear, there wasn't any.
Well, not very much. But I thought I'd drop over and give you some dope I got on the hunch.
Mm-hmm. Still playing hunches, Sebastian?
Yeah. Sometimes they're a good idea. Well, I don't know whether this is worth a nickel to you, but a few days ago, I saw a couple of Mexican sheiks over on the island that were dressed like the ones described in this holdup.
Yeah?
What were they doing?
Oh, they were innocent enough. Had a couple of girls with them. And they were taking pictures. But here's where the hunch comes in. Somehow, they didn't look on the up and up to me, so I took the license number of the coupe they were driving. I got it here someplace. You want it?
Sure.
Here it is. Here. 5 Edward 1495. Now, wait a minute. I took down that number again while I was checking at the bridge. I'm sure I did, too. Wait till I look at this other list. Yes, sir, here it is. 5 Edward 1495. Chrysler coupe with two Mexican dames in it. Yeah, here's their name. Dolores Gonzalez driving, accompanied by Mona Martinez, both employed by the Gold Star Fish Cannery. And they live up on 8th Street near the school.
Yeah, we know all about that school. That's where this guy who rented the car lives.
Hey, you better hop up there to the girls' rooms and see if you can find them, Evans. Try to wire Sacramento and get the registration on this license number.
The department Department of Motor Vehicles quickly replies to Captain Gentry's query with the information that license 5E1495 is registered to Dolores Gonzalez at an address on 3rd Street in San Francisco. In the meantime, Detective Evans is calling at the girl's lodging.
Yes?
You're the landlady here?
I am.
Well, I'm trying to locate Dolores Gonzalez and Mona Martinez. They live here, don't they?
Well, they did.
What do you mean?
They checked out a half hour ago.
They did?
That's what I said.
You know where they went?
No. And this ain't no information booth for their boyfriend.
Wait a minute. Don't shut that door in my face. I'm not a boyfriend of theirs. I'm a police officer.
A police officer? Oh, I always knew them two would get into some kind of trouble.
Oh, they're not in trouble. I want to question them.
Well, they ain't here. I told you that.
Are you sure of that?
Sure, I'm sure of it. Oh, here's the money they paid the rent with.
Here, just a minute. Let me see that dough. New $1 bill. Five of them. I'll give you a $5 bill for them.
What for?
Because I want them.
Well, all right, I guess, if your five's good money.
Well, if it isn't, you can always find me at the police station. Look here, you said something about the boyfriends of these two girls. Did they have many?
Well, it wasn't the number. Was the kind there was.
What do you mean?
Oh, a couple of sheiks used to hang around here most of the time.
What did they look like?
They was Mexican. One was sort of dark and the other was lighter, with curly hair.
You don't have a picture of them, do you?
Why should I have a picture of them?
Well, I just wondered. Did the girls have any pictures of them?
They was always taking pictures. That Dolores girl had a roll of film in her hand today when she paid me the rent.
Oh, she did?
Yes, she did. Look here, I don't see where this is getting anybody, and I got a lot of work to do.
Quite all right. You told me all I want to know.
Why, I haven't told you a thing.
That's what you think. Thanks very much.
Good day.
Well, I declare.
The landlady's dollar bills bear the same serial numbers as the money issued to Mrs. Nargo. Every drugstore and Kodak store in San Pedro is searched for the roll of film. Every traffic policeman and motorcycle patrolman is furnished with the number of the Chrysler Coupe on their daily hot sheet of wanted cars. San Francisco police are asked to watch for the two girls in the coupe, and police in Ventura, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, every town between San Francisco and Los Angeles are requested to be on the lookout. The following morning, Lieutenant Barlow, police department fingerprint expert, sends his report to Captain Gentry, who is opening it just as Evans bursts into his office.
Well, here they are.
What?
Why, the missing pictures.
Where'd you get them?
Picked them up at the Green Cross drugstore. They were in the name of that Gonzalez girl.
Oh, that's swell. I say, look here. Barlow reports that the prints on that car are the same as those of Paul Jajula, alias J. Colano.
Well, I'll be. Used his old aliases when he rented the car.
Yep. He's on parole now after serving time for a robbery job in 1928.
Up to his old tricks again, eh?
Looks like it. I say, here's a kick.
Yeah?
Oh, this is good. His address entered on his police record is 832 8th Street. At school again. Well, let's have a look at those pictures.
Yeah, here they are. Two women and two guys.
Well, so far so good. They fit the description. Yeah, here's the wavy-haired one wearing the gray suit and the darker one in the blue suit.
Yeah, and look at this. The wavy-haired one poses full face with one of the dames in this picture. And then in this one, he poses profile. That's as good as shooting him for the mug book. If we can find a mug on him, it'll be a cinch to identify him.
Well, one of these guys is Colano. The question is, which one?
Better get Barlow to send you his mug.
I'll do that right away. And you take these snaps over to the island and see if you can get an identification from the Japanese woman. Oh, yeah, and you'd better stop in on that landlady and the parking station manager. See if they recognize him, too.
Right.
Mrs. Nargo, the distraught victim of the robbery, is doubtful in her identification of the man in the blue suit, but is certain that the one in the gray suit is the same as the criminal who seized her money. The landlady identifies the curly-haired man as Dolores' boyfriend and the darker one as Mona's sweetie. The manager of the auto-renting park identifies the darker suspect as Colano, the man who rented the car. But the police are stopped when they try to identify the curly-haired man in the gray suit. Then, the next day, as traffic officer L.H. Bowden stands his watch at 6th and Spring in Los Angeles.
Hey, buddy. What are that green
2 going down spring.
Okay, jump on. What's that?
Well, I wanted a car, and they didn't stop.
Well, you can't get through that traffic on 5th. Here we are.
Now pull over to the curb.
Who, me?
Yes, you. It's a big idea of not stopping when I blew my whistle.
Were you whistling at me?
Yes, I was.
Dolores never stop when men whistle at her.
Well, she better stop when the man wears a badge. I got to put you girls under arrest.
Arrest? What for?
Well, we stopped with that light back there.
Yeah, I know. It ain't that. This car's wanted.
Wanted by who?
Wanted by the police.
Oh, but this is my car. It's not stolen. It's mine. Hey, we ain't done nothing.
I can't help that, girls. I got to take you in.
Loudly protesting their innocence, the two girls are booked at Central Station and then transferred to San Pedro, where they are questioned.
Ah, come on, boys. What's the big idea of pinching Dolores and me? We ain't done nothing.
Nobody said you have, Mona. We just want to ask you some questions, that's all.
Yeah, and show you some pictures.
Pictures? What kind of pictures?
Oh, some friends of yours.
Some friends of mine? Who?
Did you ever see this guy before?
Him? No, never saw him before in my life.
Sure of that? How come he's posing with you in this shot?
Oh, say, what's the idea of copying our pictures,
Oh,
huh?
You can have them back after we're through with them.
Sure you can. But right now, we're interested in this guy in the picture with you. A pretty cheeky-looking boyfriend, ain't he, Mona?
Yeah, he's okay, but he ain't mine.
No? Well, whose is he?
Dolores. We just posed that way for fun.
Yeah? Who took the picture?
Dolores.
Sure it wasn't this guy.
Why, who's that?
Oh, come on, Mona. You wouldn't fool us now, would you?
Well, I don't know who he is. I never saw him before.
Well, how about you, Dolores? We found a money order for $25 in your purse, made out to a Julia Gonzalez in Puerto Rico and signed by Ignacio Gonzalez. Who is this Ignacio Gonzalez, Dolores? Your brother?
I haven't got any brothers. He's just a friend of mine.
How come you got the money order?
He asked me to send it.
How'd you pay for it? In new dollar bills?
What do you mean?
Maybe the dollar bill was taken from that poor Japanese woman a couple of days ago on the island, eh?
Say, what are you trying to pull off? I don't know nothing about no new dollar bills or hold up.
Who is Ignacio Gonzalez, Dolores?
Just a friend of mine.
Is this a picture of him?
Madre, how did you...
Never mind how he got them. Who is this man in the gray suit? Is this Ignacio Gonzalez?
No, I tell you, I never saw him before.
But you must have. Well, here's a picture of your friend Mona and him, and Mona tells us you took the picture. Now, who is this Sheik Dolores? What's his name?
Well, we call him Buddy. That's the only name we know. He's a friend. He's been visiting down here from San Francisco. But it ain't done nothing. You can't pin anything on him.
Convinced that the man in gray is the same Ignacio Gonzalez, whose name appears on the money order in Dolores' purse, Captain Gentry has Los Angeles and San Francisco check their mug books for the man. A couple of days later, the records from San Francisco arrive, and the police pictures check with the snapshots. After 4 days, the girls are released for insufficient evidence and declare they are leaving for San Francisco at once. Gentry asks the San Francisco police to keep a lookout for the girls' coupe and also to watch the Gonzalez girls' address in the northern city. A week later, as Detectives George P. Wafer and P.H. Keneally are cruising the waterfront in a radio car looking for stolen automobiles, they pick up Dolores and Mona parked in their Chrysler coupe. They arrest the girls on suspicion of robbery, send them to the station, and remain on watch near the Chrysler. Shortly, a big sedan comes up beside the coupe.
Hey, Dolores, what are you doing? You're sleeping?
Just a minute, boys. We want to talk to you.
Hey, stop. We're police officers.
Threading their way at breakneck speed through the narrow streets around the waterfront, the police car follows the fleeing sedan. So fast is the pace of the police car that smashes into the rear fender of the sedan before it can be stopped.
Well,
This baby won't run away anymore.
Dead?
Look at him. 4 bullets in the head.
Yeah, but there was 2. Where's the other one?
He must have jumped out as they hit the curb. Come on, he can't be far away.
In the wrecked car, Detectives Wafer and Keneally find the body of Killane, apparently shot at the wheel as he sought to escape. But Ignacio Gonzalez had escaped in the darkness, and although police scoured the vicinity, he was not found. But so extensively did we advertise for him, and so persistent was our search that, nearly a year later, when he was admitted to a hospital in Stockton for treatment of a minor injury, he was promptly recognized and arrested. Gonzalez was a confirmed criminal who had been arrested 11 times in 5 years. This time he was convicted on a charge of first-degree robbery, and it is doubtful if the parole board will again release such a habitual offender from his present home in San Quentin Penitentiary.
Thank you, Chief Seeger. Ladies and gentlemen, Chief Seeger has been talking tonight to an audience of millions of people, which includes many boys and girls who are anxious to help the police departments of their cities enforce the laws and capture criminals. The Rio Grande Junior Police Department has enrolled hundreds of thousands of these boys and girls on the side of law and order. Rio Grande supplies police badges, detective microscopes, fingerprint outfits, and other detective and G-man paraphernalia free to all members. We invite every boy and girl listening tonight to join. See the Rio Grande dealer in your neighborhood and ask how you can get your detective outfit free. And parents, bring your youngsters with you when you drive in for Rio Grande cracked gasoline. While they're enrolling for crime prevention, why don't you enroll for accident prevention? Now is the time to lubricate for safety, and your Rio Grande dealer is equipped to give your car scientific Sinclair lubrication. This is entirely different from the ordinary grease job you usually get. Sinclair engineers have worked with the manufacturers of your car, of every car, and both have agreed upon a certain Sinclair oil or lubricant for every moving part. Sinclair lubrication is the kind your car maker specifies. Sinclair makes over 120 different oils and greases to ensure that your car is scientifically and correctly lubricated. All Rio Grande cracked gasoline dealers are equipped and trained to give your car Sinclair scientific lubrication, the kind that prevents accidents.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy.
It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Calling all cars, a copyrighted program transcribed and dedicated to the prevention of crime.
Calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 4. Proceed at once to Central Police Station. There's a man in the chief's office threatening to blow up the building. That is all. Gordon.
That law enforcement departments are better equipped to fight crime than crime is to fight them. The departments are furnished with every time-saving device and reinforced by modern science. Peace officers are trained by experts skilled in every phase of police investigation. And last but not least, the men who protect society are willing to give their lives in performance of their duty. In the story you're about to hear, a police officer made a decision that took the kind of courage for which our law enforcement agents are noted. Took a chance with the odds of 100-1 against him. Listen to the true story of the human bomb. We reach far back in the police records to bring you a story of one of the most daring and desperate plots ever attempted by one man. A dynamite terrorist held an entire city police force at bay and threatened to blow the city hall to bits as he calmly sat in the chief of police's office with his infernal machine on his lap. One morning, a strange apparition looking like a man from Mars appeared at the chief's office. His face was completely covered with a sheepskin hood, which was pierced in two places by ghostly green goggles. Atop the hood, he wore a battered soldier's campaign hat. He carried a large box painted blood red. One hand he held inside the box. The other, supporting the box on the outside, was also painted blood red. The chief secretary, amazed at his appearance, accosted him as he pushed through the swinging gate into the office.
Who did you wish to see?
I want to see the highest officer of the city.
Well, you're in the wrong place.
Let me by. I'm going in there.
You'll have to state your business.
Let me by if you know what's good for
Let's
you.
Let's out there, Miss Jim.
This man wants
Let
in, but
me
he won't...
by.
Let him in. I'll talk to him.
I want to see the highest officer of the city. Are you him?
Well, I'm chief of police, if that's what you mean.
Are you the boss around here?
Well, in this building, yes. Where did you come from? A fancy dress ball?
It don't make no difference where I come from.
Well, who are you?
That is my business, too.
Well, maybe you'll tell me why you're dressed up like this. Are you advertising something?
No, I'm not advertising anything. I mean business. I came down here for a reason. And I got something here that's going to make you do as I say.
Well, now, that all depends.
Depends? On what?
Depends on what you've got there.
Oh, it will do the business.
And what do you want me to do? What's in the box?
A machine that will blow this building and everyone in it to bits.
What did you say?
I said a machine that will blow this building and everyone in it to bits.
Indeed?
Yeah, indeed. You want a demonstration?
Oh, no, thanks. Perhaps there's no need for it. Now, maybe you'll tell me what's on your mind.
I want you to send for Paul Shoup, the president of the Pacific Electric Railroad, and make him come down here. I want to talk to him.
Paul Shoup?
Yeah, Paul Shoup. That's the man I mean. Get him down here.
Now, whatever in the world do you want with Paul Shoup?
That is my business. He's the whole shooting match down at the railroad company, and I want to talk to him.
But he couldn't help you. He doesn't own the railroad. He's just the president.
You heard me. I want you to get Paul Shoup down here. I got something to say to him. Remember, all I have to do to set this thing off is to jerk my hand out of the box.
Yes, that's all right. Now, we'll try to get in touch with him in just a second. Oh, Snively.
Yes, sir?
Get in touch with Paul Shoup, president of the Pacific Electric Railway, and ask him to come down here at once.
Yes, sir.
And show him in the moment he gets here.
You're not going to call him, are you?
Didn't you see the chief wink? I'm going to fake the call. I'll go into my desk in the chief's office. You ring me from the switchboard, and I'll answer on a dead line. Get it?
Yes. Oh, but I'm scared.
Do as I say.
All right.
They're ringing him now, sir.
Oh, that's good. Now, look here. Did it ever occur to you that you'd blow yourself up as well as the building if you let that thing go?
That is my business. I've thought it all out. I'm going to see that those railroad men get a square deal... or die trying.
Well, there's the call, Chief. I'll get it. Hello, Pacific Electric? Mr. Shoup, please. Chief Sebastian calling. Oh, he's not there yet. Well, just as soon as he comes in, ask him to come down to the Chief of Police's office. Yes, it's very important. Thanks. Goodbye.
Well, when will he be here?
Well, they said that they expected him any moment.
Good. When that guy gets here, he'll listen to me. He'll give those poor railroad men the wages they should get, or else.
Well, good morning, Grace.
Good morning, Lieutenant.
Who's the scarecrow in the chief's office?
Huh? He says he's going to blow up the place with that box.
Oh, is that so?
Oh, it's terrible. I'm so scared. Maybe he really will, Lieutenant.
Well, just to be on the safe side, maybe you'd better get the other girls and get out of the building.
Where are you going?
I'm going in there and see if I can kid him out of it. Good morning, Chief.
Oh, yes, it's Sam.
I want to speak to you about that Gonzalez case and... I'm sorry, I didn't know you were busy. Well, for the love of... Oh, what's this?
Keep your distance.
What have you got there? A shoe-shining outfit?
You won't think so about the time I pull the trigger inside this box.
Oh, is that so? What is it? One of those infernal machines?
Yeah. That's what it is.
Oh, fine. I've always wanted to see one of those. You mind if I look?
Wait a minute. I'll show you something. You see this?
Mm-hmm.
That's dynamite. There are 59 sticks like it in here. Enough to blow this whole building into a cloud of dust. Now, do you believe me?
No, I think you're joking. Now, listen, we've got a jailer here named John Shands who knows all about that stuff. Let him have a look at your box. And if he says it's dynamite, we'll all believe it.
Okay. Tell him to come ahead. But if he tries anything funny...
Oh, he won't. I'll see if he's around. Oh, John! John Shands!
Yeah.
John! In the chief's office, will you?
Come in!
Shoup had better hurry. I'm getting tired of holding this trigger. And all I need to do is let her go.
Now, don't get excited.
Good morning, Chief. Did he call?
Oh, yes, sir. Brown here called you.
Yes, sir.
Oh, this man here claims he's got dynamite in that box, and I doubt him, John. I want you to tell me if it's the real stuff. Here, let me have that sample.
Here you are. You'll find out quick enough.
Yeah. Well, John, what about it?
It's the real thing, all right. Huh? Looks like about 80%.
Yeah? Well, he says he's got 66 there. Claims that's enough to blow us to bits, is that right?
Blow us to bits? I'd say it would. And scatter the bits over the county.
Rumor spreads like wildfire through the downtown district.
There's a maniac loose.
He's going to blow up the police station.
Murder. Wholesale murder.
There's a madman in the police station. Hurry up to the police station.
Crowds of imprudent people bear down on the police station, mill round the entrance on First Street. Mounted police strive vainly to push them back to a safe distance.
Get back there! Get back there! Move back!
You gotta get back!
Hurry, Harry! We'll have to get some more men and rope the street off!
And in the jail on the third floor, the excitement of the crowd informs the 260 prisoners of their helpless plight as a sergeant rushes through the building, warning the city employees to get out at once.
Get out of the building, folks.
What's the matter?
There's a man in the chief's office with a bomb. Everybody out of the building. Hurry, girls. Get out as fast as you can.
We don't want to get blown up. Get your ass out of here.
Hey, John, what are we going to do with these men?
You get them out, all right. Get some of the boys and help me herd them into the drunk tank. They've sent for a streetcar. It'll be waiting by the time we get them out the back way.
Good, okay.
Pipe down, pipe down. We can't get no place with all this noise. Now listen to me. I'm unbarring the doors. File out and barring the doors. File out and march down to the drunk tank. And don't try any funny business. All right, boys, get along there. Make it snappy. Come on, boys, we haven't all day. Now listen carefully, men. Down in the chief's office, there's a nut with a load of dynamite threatening to blow up the building.
I'm serving 30 days for beating my old lady. I wasn't given no death sentence.
All right, all right. Pipe down now and listen. The boys are stalling this bird along, trying to kid him out of it.
Let them be heroes if they want to. You don't want to get me.
Yeah, but we're caught like rats in the trap. Yeah, boys, boys. That's what I'm trying to tell you. If you'll all be quiet, we'll be out of here in 5 minutes. Now listen, we're taking you out the side way and we're putting you into a streetcar. Now for the next few minutes, act like men, not cowards. Okay, Bob, get him into the handcuff chain.
All right.
We'll get you out of here in no time, boys.
All right, come on.
Under the watchful eye of Jailer Shand, the 260 prisoners are emptied from the jail, loaded on the waiting streetcar and transported to the East Side Station. In the chief's office, Sebastian and the terrorist face each other silently. The hooded man keeps his hand within the blood-red box, balefully watching the chief through his green goggles. In the outer offices, detectives discuss the situation in hushed tones.
He could use an ammonia gun on him.
Yeah, that ought to work.
Well, he claims that the thing goes off when he releases his hand. If we used ammonia, then the relaxation of his hand would blow us up. How about clapping a chloroform sponge on his face?
Oh, that's not good. Couldn't get behind him. He's sitting plumb against the wall. And remember, he's wearing that sheepskin mask.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hello, John. Get the prisoners out okay?
Yeah, they're all gone, thank heaven. Any change up here?
No. We're trying to figure out how to get that box away from the guy.
See here. I could draw a bead on him from where I'm standing with his coat of mine, and he'd be dead before he knew it.
Yeah, and so would you, probably. And too late now, anyway. He just moved his chair. Say, I got an idea. Let's tell him that Paul Shoup will meet him at the corner of First and Broadway.
Yeah, then when you get him down there in that mob of people, what then?
Well, we can clear the streets first.
Not without calling out the National Guard.
Yeah, wait a minute. We could try it. Get him out of the building, and then make a break to get out of the way and take a pot shot at him from a safe
distance. Okay, we got to try anything.
All right, go ahead, Snively. Give him the message.
Beg pardon, Chief, but Mr. Shoup just called and said he'd meet you on the corner of First and Broadway in 5 minutes.
Very well. Shall we go down and meet him?
You think you're pretty smart, don't you? Don't you think I'm wise to dodge like that? Well, I am. And it won't go. Here I am and here I stay until Shoup shows up. And what's more, I'm getting tired of waiting. I've been here a half hour now. If he don't show up in 15 minutes, I'm going to jerk my hands off this box. Now, think that over.
Oh, but that wouldn't accomplish your purpose. You said you wanted to talk to Shoup. Something about the railroad men's wages. Oh, that doesn't concern us. Now, if you let that thing go, you'd kill a lot of policemen and yourself as well. There wouldn't be any point to that.
Well, I don't count. And I don't like policemen.
Minute after minute ticks on as the grotesquely clad killer faces the chief of police in sheer defiance. Seated stiffly upright, the skin hood outlining his nose and mouth, He looks like some brooding god from an ancient Assyrian temple. Outside, held in check by policemen and jail trustees, the mob grows by the hundreds every minute. While the detectives ponder some sort of solution to the dilemma, a newspaper photographer, at risk of his life, poises his camera for a picture of the terrorist.
What was that? Oh, a picture. That is all right. Put it in your paper as a lesson to the exploiters of the working men. And you'd better get that camera out of here fast, because I'm yanking my hand out of here in just 3 minutes.
All right, now wait a minute. Listen, hadn't you better use some common sense about
it? Oh, be quiet. I'm ready to die even if you're not. Get Shoup over here in the next 3 minutes.
You hear that? He's going to set it off in 3 minutes. He will, too. We've got to do something.
I can't figure a thing out.
Are you game to go in there with me?
I'm game to go in with you anywhere, anytime, Sam. You've been in tough spots before.
All right. You got a blackjack?
Yeah.
Now, we'll go in there and ask him about the thing, and then...
What are you two whispering about? If you're ready to put that guy out, count me in on it.
We don't need you, John. Sam and I can pull it okay. No use in anyone else risking his neck.
The two of you together aren't big enough to keep me out.
All right, here's the plan. You crown him, Jim, and I'll grab the box and run to the street.
I'll grab the
box. No, I will, Fitz.
Oh, listen, Jim, you got a wife to think about.
Now, cut the argument. I'm grabbing the box. If we don't get in there in a minute, he's going to let that thing go.
Okay, let's go.
All set, Jim?
Set. Mr. Shoup will be here any minute now, but whether you come to an agreement with him or not, I wish you'd give us fellows time to get out of here before you set that thing off.
When Shoup gets here, I don't care what you birds do.
Pretty neat little contraption you got there. Must have taken you quite a while to rig that up. What's this thing for?
What thing?
This gadget down here. You got it, Jim?
I got it.
As the terrorist slumps forward, both Fitzgerald and Brown grab at the box. Brown yanks it from Fitzgerald and runs down the stairway. Seeing a fuse sizzling within the infernal machine, he plunges his hand through the glass top of the box, extinguishing the flame. Down the stairs he leaps and out the front door of the police station. A cameraman has set up his tripod in front of the entrance. Hurtling out of the door in his headlong flight, Brown stumbles over the tripod. He has the presence of mind to throw the bomb from him. Sticks of dynamite spill from it as it careens down First Street, scattering the frightened crowd. Jumping to his feet, Brown runs to the smashed box and, holding it high over his head, smashes it again and again on the cobblestone.
All right. All right. Well, it's all over.
Oh, great work, Sam.
You're a hero.
Say, Brown, you're bleeding.
Huh? Oh, that's funny. I didn't notice it before. I must have cut myself when I jammed my hand in there to fit that fuse out.
You mean you actually stuck your hand in the thing and put it out?
Oh, sure. It was the only thing to do, wasn't it?
Certain that no damage could come from the infernal machine, the broken parts are collected from the street and carefully pieced together by police experts attempting to discover how the apparatus was to work. The machinery centers round a gun hammer mounted on a base. Under the hammer is a shotgun shell. Evidently, when the terrorist released the hammer, it would explode the shell. This explosion would ignite a slow-burning fuse leading to the 60 sticks of dynamite. One stick of this dynamite tested in Elysian Park blew a rock the size of an automobile into tiny bits. A few hours later, Brown and Fitzgerald visit the human bomb in the receiving hospital.
Well, how is he, Doctor?
He'll pull through, I think. He's semi-conscious now. For a while there, I was afraid we'd lose him.
Well, don't lose him, Doc. We want to talk to him.
Well, you can go in now. My head.
Hello, my friend. How do you feel now?
Where am I?
You're in the hospital.
Yeah. You're mighty lucky you're not in the morgue.
Where's my machine?
It's been taken all apart. And it did blow us to bits like you promised it would.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Now, you guys sneaked up on me and slugged me. But I can't understand why it didn't work. I must have made the fuse too long or something. It should have gone off.
Well, it didn't, thanks to the bravery of Sam here.
Oh, come on, John. Come on, don't cut it. Now, look here. We want to find out something about you.
Well, fire ahead.
What's your name?
Carl Weiss.
Mm-hmm.
Age?
35.
Where do you live?
Over on Lake Street.
Now, tell us, what was the big idea of that show you put on today?
Well, I thought the railroad men ought to have a little more money. That's why I told you to send for Paul Shoup. I thought I could scare him into promising to raise their wages.
Besides, lots of men are out of work.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you got a job?
Yeah. I do a little carpentry work now and then. I worked for the railroad company once. That's when I got the idea that they didn't get enough pay.
Well, you thought you'd do something about it, eh?
Well, I tried.
What do you think we should do with you? Don't you realize what a terrible thing you were going to do?
No. I don't think I committed any crime. I kept telling you men to keep away from me. If the machine had gone off as I expected, well, it was their fault. You committed a bigger crime than I did.
Well, I don't follow your reasoning. But let's hear how that machine was to operate.
Well, it was fixed with shotgun caps, with powder connecting up to dynamite caps. I had a fuse in there, and while I was arranging things inside the box to get it connected properly, I made a mistake and put the cap in the wrong place.
Yeah?
Yeah. So in order to hold the powder, I used a little dynamite to fill up the hole. I guess that's why it didn't burn fast enough. Mm-hmm. You guys didn't give it time to burn through.
Well, we didn't.
Be quiet. You see, this machine was different from most. Instead of having to pull the trigger to make it go off, I had to hold on tight to keep it from going off. You see, I can't understand what happened when you hit me over the head. I thought sure the minute my fingers let go of that trigger, the thing would explode. And it should have, because it was a beautiful machine. It was a beautiful piece of workmanship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't share your admiration for the thing. But I would like to know, what was the idea of the two red wooden fingers we found on the street near the box?
Oh, them. Well, you see, I got two fingers missing on the right hand, and I knew if you ever looked in the box and saw them, you could identify me.
Why? Have you ever been arrested before?
Yeah, once. You got me in the rogues gallery.
Look here. Why did you go to the police station after Mr. Shoup? You knew you wouldn't find him there.
Because I was afraid if I went to the railroad office, the bomb might cause a panic, and some of those poor workers might get hurt.
But you didn't worry about killing a bunch of policemen.
Huh. Well, that wouldn't have mattered so much.
Well, I don't know about that. Well,
why have you got it in for policemen?
Oh, nothing in particular. Only they're always going around arresting somebody. And anyway, I didn't think you'd be foolish enough to monkey with the box. I was just getting ready to yank my hand out when you started asking fool questions. I don't know why I didn't see that blackjack in time. I don't...
What other part of your scheme didn't work?
Well, the railroad man didn't show up.
Well, what if he had shown up and refused to do what you asked?
We found a pair of handcuffs on me, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, I intended to handcuff Mr. Shoup to me. Then I was going to make him walk out of the station with me, like he was an officer, and I was a crazy man. I was going to make him keep walking until we got out into the open country somewhere. Then I'd have kept him right there until he did what I said.
And if he'd still refused, you were going to set off the dynamite.
He'd have promised all right. And I'd have given him 6 weeks to make good.
What do you mean?
Well, if he hadn't given the men a raise in 6 weeks, I'd have come back down to the police station again. But I wouldn't have waited. I'd have blown it up as soon as I walked into the place. I intended to see that a working man got a square deal.
You didn't choose a very effective way to see it done.
Well, I guess it was as good as any.
Don't you think it was pretty brave of Sam here to grab that box from you?
No. I don't see where it deserves any credit. You had no right to hit me. I was only trying to get a raise for the railroad man.
Have you ever been confined to an insane asylum?
An insane asylum?
Yes.
An insane asylum. You don't think I'm crazy, do you? Why, I'm perfectly sane. I'm all right. It's you people that can't see the injustice and suffering in the world. It's you people that are crazy.
In just a moment, you will hear the summation of our story. The test of insanity in a criminal case is whether or not the accused is conscious of the difference between right and wrong. If he is conscious of this distinction, then he is not legally insane. This test was applied to Carl Weiss. He reacted to it just like an average, intelligent person. Therefore, from a legal standpoint, Carl Weiss was sane, though he did suffer from the martyr complex. But this did not becloud his mind as far as knowing right from wrong. He was perfectly aware of the distinction. Carl Weiss was then duly tried on the charge of illegally transporting and depositing explosives in a public place. In this case, a police station. The jury found him guilty, and the court sentenced him to prison for 20 years. No, crime does not pay. Attention all cars. Cancellation broadcast 4. Suspect now in custody. That is all. Gordon.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.